And we're now joined by Netsana to unpack what this ruling means and why it's such a big deal, not just for Israel, but for global justice. Netsana, thank you so much for joining us here on The Home Run. You've been fighting this case for nearly a decade. What was the turning point that finally made the court rule in your favor?
I believe this court, the Supreme Court, decided that there should be a price for terrorism. And there is a limit to how much you can avoid jurisdiction when you actually have ties with the United States. You see, let me just explain what was the reason for this turning point. We won a judgment in 2015 for $655 million against the Palestinian Authority after 11 years that the case went on in the federal court in New York. And then the Palestinian Authority filed an appeal and argued one argument that there is no jurisdiction for the United States court to put the Palestinian Authority on trial. There is no connection between the Palestinian Authority and the United States. There is no representation of the Palestinian Authority in the United States. They don't do businesses in the United States. And there are no ties to the United States. Therefore, there is no personal jurisdiction. And the Court of Appeals had a dilemma because, on one hand, we filed this lawsuit based on the Anti-Terrorism Act. This is a law that Congress legislated to allow American citizens who are killed or injured abroad to bring their cases in the United States against overseas terror organizations. This is an extraterritorial jurisdiction law. But on the other hand, the American Constitution demands due process, personal jurisdiction. In the end, the Court of Appeal decided to vacate the judgment. So we went to Congress and we said that there is a problem. There is a problem because we litigated this case for many, many years based on a law that they legislated, which was a very well-intended law, but now was struck by the court for being unconstitutional. And they have to fix the problem. And their way to fix the problem was to reinstate personal jurisdiction, to come and say that if the Palestinian Authority wants to continue to receive aid from the United States, that actually means that there are ties between the Palestinian Authority to the United States, and therefore there is personal jurisdiction.
In practical terms, what happens next for the victims' families? Do you think they'll realistically get compensation, or is that still a long road ahead?
So I believe that now the court, the district court in New York, that the case will be rendered down to, has two choices. One, to reinstate the judgment. As I said, we already have a judgment, $655 million. The other option is to retrial the case again, to open it from the beginning. After 21 years of litigation, I want the court to be considerate, and I want the court to see the terror victims' families in front of his eyes and to decide that enough is enough and to reinstate the judgment. And once the court will reinstate the judgment, we are going to enforce it against the Palestinian Authority's money in Israel. As you know, Israel collects tax money for the Palestinian Authority. We'll go domesticate the case in Israel, and we'll put a lien on this money, and we'll confiscate $655 million from the tax money of the Palestinian Authority in favor of this judgment.
It sounds amazing. Has the election of Trump given you a better ability to sue in the United States?
That's, you know, I would like to believe so, but the Solicitor General that was with us from day one is actually from Obama's days, from Biden days. The truth of the matter is that the court gave the freedom to Congress to decide what creates contact in terms of jurisdiction. And actually allows him really to legislate a law that permits American citizens to bring their cases in the United States. That is a war that Congress declared on terrorism. That is a war that Congress decided to go full force against those who fund terrorists. So why should it be struck down for technical reasons? Supreme Court saw this, the administration, former one and the current one, see eye to eye and allow us to continue with the case and actually open the door now to many, many, many victims from Israel to file a lawsuit in the United States against the Palestinian Authority.
Nitzana, how many lawsuits do you foresee stemming from October the 7th against the Palestinian Authority?
So this case allows only American citizens to bring their case in the United States, and unfortunately, there are hundreds of victims that have American citizenship. But let's not forget that everybody can sue the Palestinian Authority in Israel. So every victim from October 7th, there are thousands of them, not the 1,200 people that were killed, but a lot of people got injured, and a lot of people have siblings that also got injured and affected by this horrible massacre. All these people can bring cases in Israel against the Palestinian Authority. As a matter of fact, there are many, many lawsuits brought now against the Palestinian Authority in Israel on behalf of the October 7 victims. The Palestinian Authority is facing billions, if not tens of billions of dollars, compensations in different lawsuits against it in Israel and very soon in the United States.
Just onto something different. Can the Iranian government be sued for the missiles that harmed Israeli citizens?
100%. Again, on behalf of American citizens, the United States has a special law that strips Iran from its sovereign immunity. Congress said that a state-sponsored terrorism is not acting as a sovereign state and should not enjoy sovereign immunity. So only, but only in the United States, you can bring a lawsuit against Iran for aiding and abetting terrorism. And little to say for a direct hit against citizens in Israel. As long as I said they have American citizenship. In Israel, you cannot sue Iran, not in any other country in the world. They enjoy sovereign immunity.
And if someone in America was to sue Iran, are there any assets that can be seized?
That's a great question. I can tell you that in the beginning of these cases, we actually exhausted all the Iranian assets. They did have assets. They had bank accounts, frozen bank accounts, that we put our hands on it. And they had real estate, buildings in New York, in Texas, owned by the Iranian government that we confiscated. We put a lien, we enforced our judgment against them. Deals that they have, contracts that they have, all is gone in the United States. However, in the process that Trump is negotiating now with Iran, in any agreement that Trump will try to reach, the victims will stand up and say, you have to enforce Iran to pay the judgment. That's a precedent thing that happened before with Libya, when Libya wanted to get out of the designated terrorists and to have normalization with the United States, the first thing they had to do is paying their judgment against them, and they paid $2 billion. Same thing happened with Sudan. When the United States reached an agreement with them, they paid $300 million for a lawsuit that was pending against them. And so we need to do with Iran. Iran should know that there is a cost to Jewish life, and you cannot kill innocent person and go without pay.
Can Qatar also be sued for aiding and abetting Hamas?
Qatar should be sued for aiding and abetting Hamas. Qatar is the mother of October 7th. Qatar funds Hamas and gave them hundreds of millions of dollars annually. The only problem is that Qatar is a sovereign state and they have sovereign immunity. We in Shurat Adin have filed lawsuits against the Qatari charity foundations. This is actually the tool through the Qatari government is funding Hamas. And these lawsuits are going on in United States and in Israel, and hopefully we can punish Qatar through their charity foundation.